If your child is in high school and they're taking challenging courses and doing well, by challenging courses, I mean honors, AP, IB, dual enrollment, and they're getting good grades, there's every chance that they are college capable, that they'll be able to handle the academics in college. And sometimes when kids get accepted to a college, they or their parents think, well, the college wouldn't have accepted me if they didn't think I was ready. But being college capable and college ready is not the same thing. Being college capable means you can handle the academics. Being college ready means you're ready for the independence of living away at college.
I'm Debbie Reber, and welcome to Tilt Parenting, a podcast featuring interviews and conversations aimed at inspiring, informing, and supporting parents raising differently wired kids. As many listeners know, Asher is doing a gap year this year, having graduated from high school last summer. And so I've been pretty immersed in the world of gap years, but I've been getting so many questions from families who want to know more about navigating this. And in fact, I've been hearing more and more about the benefits of gap years for all students, not just neurodivergent kids, especially since the pandemic. So I decided to devote an episode to it. The questions I get the most are, what exactly is a gap year? How is a parent to know if their child would benefit from taking a gap year? How should a student be spending their time between high school and college, if indeed that is the next step for them? And where should I start when it comes to finding and vetting the best programs and possibilities for a child taking this year off? To explore this topic, I invited Dr. Eric Enlick, a clinical psychologist, founder of Top College Consultants, an expert who guides students with learning differences and mental health challenges through the college application process. I asked Eric how we can determine as parents whether our kid is ready for college or not, what type of gap year experiences for neurodivergent students even exist, and how universities perceive a student taking a gap year when considering their application. We also talked about how to find the right program for your student and how to do some vetting to make sure it's the right fit. So before we move on to the conversation, here's a little bit more about my guest. Dr. Eric Enlick has served on the Learning Differences, Neurodiversity, and DEI committees of the Independent Educational Consultants Association and was honored by IECA with the Making a Difference Award for contributions such as a database of neurodiversity-friendly colleges. He co-teaches a course called Working with Students with Learning Differences and co-manages a 16,000-member Facebook group for parents of college-bound neurodivergent students. I am in that group, and it is a great resource. As you'll hear from this episode, Eric has a wealth of knowledge about ways to navigate the sometimes lengthy and often unique runway for neurodivergent students. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hey, Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Debbie. It's great to be here.
I'm looking forward to talking about this phase of life with our young adults. I've done a couple episodes on the transition to college. We've done some conversations about navigating that and how to best present yourself to colleges. And we've talked about alternative paths, but we haven't really talked about gap years, gap programs. So I'm really excited to share this also personally. This is what I've spent the past year and a half of my life focusing on. But before we get into that, I know you do a lot of work in the space of supporting the transition to college and helping students. So can you tell us a little bit more about the work that you do in the world?
Sure. Yeah. My background is as a clinical psychologist, and I worked in the mental health field for a long time. Really enjoyed working with teens all that time. And then I discovered educational consulting, really fell in love with it, and transitioned to doing this full time. So I work with teens, primarily neurodivergent teens who have learning differences or mental health challenges, on the whole transition to college process. So figuring out if they're college ready, figuring out where is a good place for them to apply, helping them get the applications done, write the essays, as well as kind of choosing summer programs, gap year programs, high school courses, all that good stuff. And sometimes we stay in touch after they've started college to make sure the transition works well, too. But a lot of it is about being kind of college ready and making sure that they choose a good option for themselves.
That's great. I just want to share with you and also with listeners, it was Sam Young of Young Scholars Academy who connected us. I love Sam's framework in supporting neurodivergent students as well. So that's why I knew I wanted to be in touch and learn more about your work.
Yeah, Sam's great. And I love working with neurodivergent students in general, but especially twice exceptional students, which is Sam's gig too.
Yeah. You said one of the things you are working on is to figure out whether a student is ready. And I'm just wondering, do you have some best practices or thoughts? How would a parent listening know if their child is ready for that? Because I will just say, in reading articles again, because where we are in our stage of life, I've heard advice from college advisors or admissions specialists who might say, your kid's going to be in such a different place 9 months from now, just proceed and assume this growth spurt's going to happen. And it can be hard to know, where is my child going to be? So how do we do that?
Yeah, it's a good point and good question. And certainly if you're talking about a ninth or 10th grader, what you're seeing now may be quite different from what you see when they're on the verge of starting college. So certainly age and maturation can help a lot, but I wouldn't just assume that everything's going to fall into place. And with the pandemic, it's been even more of an issue. And I've written articles on college readiness and have webinars on it, so I don't know if I can fully do justice to it. But if your child is in high school and they're taking challenging courses and doing well, by challenging courses, I mean honors, AP, IB, dual enrollment, and they're getting good grades, there's every chance that they are college capable, that they'll be able to handle the academics in college. And sometimes when kids get accepted to a college, they or their parents think, well, the college wouldn't have accepted me if they didn't think I was ready. But being college capable and college ready is not the same thing. Being college capable means you can handle the academics. Being college ready means you're ready for the independence of living away at college. Now, if you're going to live at home and go to a community college, and especially just take one or two courses and maybe work part-time, then you may in fact be college ready. Although even there, there's going to be some changes from high school. But if you're talking about moving away, living in a residence hall, being college full-time, not living with your parents anymore, you're making two major transitions at once. You're transitioning to college-level academics, and you're transitioning to being away from your parents. If you've been pretty independent in high school, and nobody's helping you make sure your assignments get done, or that you brush your teeth or go to sleep on time or take your medication, and you're doing all this stuff really independently, you might in fact be college ready. I'm not saying kids aren't, plenty of kids are. But if you struggle with time management, especially getting assignments done, procrastination, organization, you probably need to work on some skills. And I break it down to a few main skills. You need to have self-awareness. You need to know what are the things you need help with. Maybe I'm not good at making friends, or it's hard for me to remember to take my medication, or I get so wrapped up in social media that I stay up really late. Knowing those things about yourself and then being able to self-advocate or take steps to address them, whether it's getting help by going to the counseling center in college, talking to your professor when you're struggling with a class, going to the tutoring center, taking some appropriate steps to deal with those challenges.
I love that distinction between college capable and college ready. That is really important. And also, I would love if we can get some links for you for some of the articles you've written and your webinars. We can include those in the show notes, because I think that would be of great interest to listeners. Before we get into the gap year conversation as well, I'm just wondering what you have found. I like statistics, even though they don't always tell a whole story, but in terms of the reality for that first year of college or moving into college for neurodivergent students, how successful it can be, or how smooth that transition or rocky that transition can be. Do you see any trends, or what have you noticed in your work?
I can tell you that a survey that was done last year, 2023, by a company called EAB found that 22% of high school students said they didn't feel ready for college. Students who are planning to go to college, they didn't feel ready. That's across the board. That's not neurodivergent students. And that's from the student's own perspective. I think there's plenty of students who think they're ready and their parents would say, whoa, you know, they are not ready. They forget their homework. They can't remember to brush their teeth or take a shower or what have you. I don't know a lot of statistics off the top of my head. I would say certainly the kids that I work with, most of them have things they need to improve to be optimally college ready. But that's probably true of neurotypical students too. And it's not that you have to have all of the skills mastered. If you struggle with going to bed on time or getting your assignments in on time, doesn't mean you shouldn't go to college, but you should at least have that awareness and have some plans to deal with it and figure out, how am I going to move the needle on that? Am I going to work on those skills before I start college, like in a gap year? Am I going to get some robust supports while I'm in college to make sure I don't kind of fall off the map and so on?
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Thank you. Let's then pivot to gap years. There's, I feel like, an increasing interest in gap years, maybe since COVID. It's certainly something that in my family, we always kind of assumed was going to be the plan to give that extra year to develop and grow and mature. And I hear more and more that I think every student should do a gap year. And I know they're more popular perhaps in Europe, just as a way to set the tone. What's the general thought about taking a gap year?
Yeah, well, I would agree that the pandemic put a spotlight on gap years. I think, you know, when we were early on in the pandemic and a lot of education was remote, I think a lot of kids felt like, hey, that's not what I'm looking for in college. I want to be in the dorms. I want to make friends and so on. I don't want to be sitting in my bedroom on Zoom. So I think for a fair number of kids, they decided, I got into college, but I'm going to take a gap year. And hopefully by the time I start college, it'll all be sort of back to normal or back to what I'm expecting from the traditional college experience. So I think that that really accelerated things. Also, I think there's been increasingly people gathering data on gap years, finding that kids who take gap years, and again, this is across the board, not just kids with learning differences, that they are more likely to graduate on time, they're more mature, they have a better sense of what they want to do, what they want to study, they get better grades. And so colleges increasingly are open to that, supportive of it. Even a handful of them will throw money at kids to incentivize them to take gap years. Definitely growing. When I talk to kids, though, I would have to say a lot of them are resistant to the idea. A lot of them are like, oh, no, you know, everyone else in my class is going straight to college. I don't want to be the one who's fallen a year behind. The irony in that, of course, is that if you take a year to work on your college readiness, your maturity, whatever skills you need to build, you may be more likely to graduate and graduate on time as opposed to jumping in when you're not ready and maybe not graduating at all.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if because of COVID too, that there were more students who were taking time in that age, whether it's your friends or just being the same chronological age as your roommate or the other students in your class in university is probably a wider range at this point.
Yeah, there's so many things that have thrown people's schedules off. One is mental health challenges, which were already on the rise, but really got accelerated during COVID. For a variety of reasons, which we won't go into. I'm a mental health professional by training, so I could talk about that for a while. But because of that, you know, some kids have taken leaves of absence for mental health reasons. So then they took longer to graduate high school.
Right. I would love to talk more about what kind of gap programs even exist. So let's take a quick break and we'll get into that.
I'm on the road this month, and oh man, am I missing my sweet kitties Haskell and Lua. They've been a part of our family for more than 2 years, and I'm so grateful they're keeping Darren such good company while I'm away. If you're getting a new pet soon, you're probably already thinking about everything you'll need to buy. Food, toys, a cozy bed, doggy bags or litter boxes. Something you may not be thinking about, though, is pet insurance. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. If you listen to this show, you probably know that at least 1 in 5 children is differently wired. But did you know that approximately 1 in 2 women will experience hair thinning? If you're part of that 50%, you are absolutely not alone. But because hair thinning for women isn't something people openly talk about, going through it can feel lonely and frustrating. So why not do something about it with Nutrafol? Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth isn't going to cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, postpartum, menopause, even for different lifestyles like a plant-based diet. To get your personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes, you can take a simple hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com. And because there's no prescription required, you can quickly get set up online with free shipping and automated deliveries, which make it so much easier to stick with your new hair care routine. See results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code TILT. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT. So as someone who has gone down the rabbit hole of gap year experiences, how would we even define what a gap year is? Because there's no one way that this should look, right?
Yeah, a gap year really just means that you're taking a year or potentially more than 1 year between high school and college. And of course, there's no deadline on starting college. You can start college at any age in life. There are people who start college decades after they've graduated high school. But for the sort of stereotypical situation of a kid who wants to go to college from high school, it typically will mean taking a year between high school and college. What you do during that year, however, could be almost anything. I don't want to see kids spending that year sitting at home watching TV or playing video games. I want them to be doing something constructive that's going to kind of move their development along or build their skills. But it could be they start their own business. That may sound crazy, but teens start their own businesses all the time. So it could be getting a job and working and saving money, which for some parents, that's not a foreign concept at all. Lots of parents had to kind of earn money for college. So could be something that's actually financially helpful in the college process. It could be doing some community service, mission work, volunteer work to make the world a better place and pursue something that a student feels passionate about. Could be an independent project, or finally, it could be a formal gap year program that the family is paying money for. And that's, I think, probably more of what we're going to focus on here, those programs that are kind of structured and designed to help kids become college ready.
Yeah. And before we get to that, do you get a sense from universities that they have a preference of how that gap year is spent, or are they very individualized?
I think the main thing is that the student has a plan. So if you're a high school senior, you get accepted to college, and you're going to put down that enrollment deposit and make that commitment. Generally, not all colleges, but many colleges are completely fine if you defer and say, I'm going to start not this coming fall, but a year from the fall. And here's what I want to use that time for. So as long as you have a plan and you say, I'm going to, you know, work and save money. I'm going to get a job at, you know, whatever, my local cafe, or I'm going to do some internships and help figure out what I want to do for a career before I start college. So as long as you present some sort of reasonable plan, I think generally colleges are fine. They're not necessarily biased for a specific thing.
Okay, that's good to know. So yeah, I would love if we could talk a little bit about some programs, especially knowing your sweet spot for where you like to work and supporting neurodivergent students, because just having spent a lot of time on the Gap Year Association website, there are so many options. I'm wondering how you would encourage parents to start to identify what would be the right type of program if they're looking at a more formal program that would be a good fit for their child.
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, I should say there are gap year specialists. There are gap year consultants who do nothing but gap year, and folks are welcome to seek out and hire them. Sure, they know way more programs than I do, but it is something that comes up a lot with the families I work with. So I do help them find gap year programs, and I do try to make it my business to know about the gap year programs that are specifically oriented towards students with learning differences or mental health challenges. I did recently a panel discussion of a number of them, which I have a YouTube recording of that I can provide the link to that too. So as far as, you know, how to find them, they can talk to us consultants. If you're already working with a consultant, they can help you find some of these programs. You can also talk to other parents. So I co-manage a Facebook group of 16,000, almost 17,000 parents of college-bound neurodivergent students. And it's very common for people to put into the discussion, hey, my kid needs such and such. Does anyone have any ideas? My kid wants to do, you know, study engineering and is looking for a summer program. Or does anyone know anything in the Midwest for this particular need? So reach out to other parents. There's so many parents who have gone down this road before you. Obviously, you can do searches online with a search engine or an AI tool as well.
In your experience, does it really depend? I'm thinking about there are probably programs that are focused on those executive function skills that you talked about, being college ready, being able to manage your time, pay attention to deadlines, all of those kinds of things. I imagine there are some that are geared more towards the social skills and feeling more equipped to engage in those environments. How do you advise parents on figuring out what would best support their student in terms of getting them college ready? Should they be looking at something that is going to give them those specific skills, which may not be as exciting as some of the other programs that are available? Like, how do you help parents hone in?
Well, it's not dissimilar to the process of choosing colleges or summer programs, in that it all comes back to, what is it that you want to accomplish? What are the skills you want to build, or what is it you want to get out of that year? So for some kids, for example, the goal might be, I'm in high school, I have no idea what I want to major in. I don't want to spend a lot of time and money in high school just sort of puttering around. I want to sort of figure out what I want to do and then start college with a particular focus. Obviously, there are plenty of kids who go to college undeclared and change majors and all of that. But there are gap years. For example, there's a program called Dynamy in Massachusetts where students do some internships during that year, and that can help them figure out what they want to do. You can also do summer programs during high school. I have lots of kids who do a summer program on a particular topic. It might be STEM related, it might be arts related, partly to help them figure out if they really want to go into this particular field. That's sort of one type of goal. Another goal, as you said, might be to work on executive functions and planning and organizational skills. And if it's a gap year program that's designed for kids with ADHD or that explicitly talks about executive function skills, then obviously that could be a good option. If it's a program that has a large, that's more focused on the autistic population or has a lot of autistic students, there's a good chance there's going to be a strong social emotional component. So you kind of want to look, match up the population and the needs depending on, as you said, what are the skills you want to work on. Then there's postgraduate or PG year programs as well as gap year programs. I think people tend to sort of treat them somewhat interchangeably, and it's totally fine to look at both. But PG programs, postgraduate year programs, tend to be offered at high schools, typically private boarding schools. And in those programs, frequently there's an academic component where you're taking some courses. And if you're a high school student who's needs sort of a longer runway and maybe a little bit more on your transcript to sort of have a more robust college application, those can be a good option. So most of the time, this is a question that comes up a lot. When should we, you know, apply to college if I'm going to take a gap year? Do I apply in 12th grade and defer? Or do I do the gap year and then apply to college? And like everything else in this field, it depends. So if you're a senior and you have a pretty good, one family called it a portfolio, you know, if you can mount a reasonably good application based on your transcript and your activities and whatnot, go ahead and apply and defer. And if you get into college and you're happy with your outcomes, it's a real win-win. You go off to your gap year and you don't have to think about college applications. You can just focus on that gap year. Worst case scenario, if you go off on that gap year, let's say you're doing some internships or some work, and then you decide, you know what, I got into this college for engineering and I changed my mind. I decided I want to be a writer and I want to go study creative writing in college. You can still go and apply again the next year. You're not absolutely locked into it. But for students who are not quite there, who they're for various reasons might have sort of, I hate to say, a weaker application, doing that PG year program, getting more stuff on their transcript, getting some good recommendations, maybe some more activities, they might want to wait and apply a year after senior year because they'll have more to talk about. Or let's say if they've started a business, they could write some really good essays about what they did during that year.
And same question as before, in terms of how colleges perceive a student taking a gap year, is there any difference in how they look at, other than the application might be more robust if it's done during or after a gap year, but is there any downside to applying after graduation from high school from the college perspective?
No, not from the college perspective. And if anything, I would say they respect a student for taking more time to mature and doing something responsible, figuring out what they want to do, starting business, doing volunteer work. I think they respect all of this. I think that that's all a plus. And I should also mention one more year is also one more year of brain development. We touched on executive function skills. The part of your brain that is responsible for executive function, the frontal lobes, continues to develop. I won't go into the neurobiology, but that continues to develop into your mid to late 20s. There's a reason why car rental companies don't rent to younger drivers, because your judgment and your executive functioning is still developing. So that's just from an executive functioning standpoint, one more year of brain development is a good thing. Back to your question about applying in senior year versus a year later, I think from the student or the family standpoint, it's just generally more convenient to apply while you're still in high school. You can walk into your teacher's office and say, hey, can you write a reference for me? And sit down and have that conversation with them. If it's a year later, now it's been, you know, they've been working with other students. Hopefully they still remember you, but the memories aren't going to be quite as fresh. You have to log in and access things. You know, you got to request transcripts. There's all this communication with your teachers, with your counselor. I think it's just less convenient, especially if you don't have as easy access to your school platform, counselors, teachers, transcripts. It's completely doable. Students do it all the time, but I think it's just more seamless when you're doing it along with everyone else in your class.
Yeah, we did the second option because of just stress and anxiety of senior year alone. We're like, you know, let's just take this off the plate and we'll deal with it next year. So that's where we are right now.
Yeah. And of course, if a student's overwhelmed, you know, if they're in 12th grade and they're having a mental health crisis, or they're barely keeping their head above water academically, emotionally, don't put more on their plate. I work with high school students primarily. Occasionally, I work with college students, but primarily I'm working with high school students applying to college. And we really try to get those applications and essays done over the summer, not during the school year, so they won't be overburdened during senior year.
Yes, that is a good strategy. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'd love to hear some of your maybe favorite GAP programs or ones that you tend to think about for families of neurodivergent students. So we'll be right back.
This year, I've been working on becoming more attuned to my body, and so I'm starting to really recognize how periodic spikes in anxiety or disruptions to my routines can seriously throw my whole system off. And as I've been traveling a ton this past month, which is both disruptive and somewhat stressful, I'm especially glad that I have the extra support of Symbiotic Plus, a 3-in-1 supplement from Ritual with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. Symbiotic Plus provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining to support a healthy gut barrier, and it comes in this very cool minty delayed-release capsule, which was specifically designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon. The bonus is that the capsules don't need to be refrigerated, so I can easily bring them with me in my carry-on. On a personal level, I love that Ritual is committed to sustainability. They're a female-founded B Corp, meaning they are holding themselves accountable long-term to not only think about their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. There's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/tilt. Start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/tilt for 25% off.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
So you mentioned a program in Massachusetts earlier in our conversation, and I would love if we could just give parents a sense of the types of programs that exist specifically for neurodivergent students. Like, what might they expect to see in a program in terms of maybe the duration and the types of environments or activities they could expect to engage in?
Sure. We're typically looking at year-long programs or programs that would last for at least an academic year, although their programs in some cases can be flexible and you could mix and match more than one thing during a gap year. There are programs that are located on college campuses, not very many. So Landmark College, which is one of only two colleges in the US that are exclusively for neurodivergent students, they have a program called Transition at College. The nice thing about doing a program at a college is you're already starting to kind of get that feel of a college, being on a college campus, living in the residence hall, and so on. And they are certainly familiar with and comfortable with autistic students as well as students with other diagnoses. Another program located on a college campus is a program at Mitchell College in Connecticut called Thames. That's been around for a long time. And again, it gives students the opportunity to have that kind of college-like experience. And in both cases, they're taking maybe one or two courses, not a full college load. So it's sort of a slow on-ramp into college. Then there's programs located, as I said, there's postgraduate programs located at high schools. There's Middlebridge School is a private high school in Rhode Island that specializes in neurodivergent students. They have a PG year. Franklin Academy in Connecticut, another private school for neurodivergent students, has a PG year. There are also non-residential programs. So those examples so far are all programs where the student would live at the program. There's another program called Winston Transitions. They have a location in New York and San Francisco. Those are non-residential programs. So you would sort of need to live in the area and go to the program during the day. But that typically is going to make the program less expensive, but also less immersive. So just kind of depends on what you're looking for. There's also a program called SOAR, which is more of an LD or ADHD program. So for students who have an ADHD diagnosis, mostly want to work on executive functioning, that can be a good option. Those are a few examples.
Yeah, the SOAR program was one we looked at because my child did a summer camp through SOAR years ago. And it's more of an adventure program, just to give listeners a sense too, that is one where you're traveling around and you're really doing outdoor adventure things while building these other skills. So wasn't the right fit for us, but an interesting option for families who have a kid who really likes that kind of experiential thing.
Exactly. I want to be familiar and help families be familiar with the range of options so that they understand it's a gap year isn't just one thing. It could be that sort of adventure type program. There are many, many gap year programs that have a travel component or an adventure component that aren't specifically for neurodivergent students. And just because you're neurodivergent doesn't mean you have to go to a program that's exclusively for neurodivergent students. But again, depends on what you want to work on. If you just want that year to kind of explore the world and do some cool things and take a break from school because you've already been in school for, you know, 12 or 13 years before you do another 4 years, then you could do a gap year that's more sort of fun, so to speak. Still building some skills, but maybe not as academic or not as focused on skill building as the college readiness type programs we've been talking about.
Right. And I'll just say, I think for a lot of us, I know when I was looking, I was pulled to things that I wish I had done as a gap year. And I always had to remember, oh, this isn't for me. This is not my gap year. This is my child's gap year, who has very different needs and a way of navigating the world. I want to spend a moment just talking about mental health challenges as well, which might be separate from the neurodivergence, often co-occurs with our neurodivergent students. Are there any special considerations or things you would want parents who are looking for more of a therapeutic program for a gap semester or a gap year that we should keep in mind?
So none of the programs I mentioned are therapeutic per se, although certainly a ton of these students do have mental health challenges, and they may have mental health staff or support students in getting mental health. I think there might be sort of a small mental health component to some of them, but if that's the main focus, then you would be looking for more of a therapeutic program. There are therapeutic consultants that really specialize in this area. So that's a bit outside my expertise, even though I'm a mental health professional by training. There's programs like the Dorm, which is in New York City and Washington, D.C., which is more explicitly therapeutic. The therapeutic programs tend to be even more expensive, but they're explicitly therapeutic. Depends on what you're looking for. If you just need a safe place and you want to continue seeing your therapist, you could probably do that at any program. If you want a program that is primarily focused on helping you build, you know, emotional regulation skills and so on, that's something different. There's a program called Semester Off in Massachusetts. It's just what it sounds like. It's originally was for sort of students who had to take a break from college, typically for mental health reasons. It was started by a psychiatrist. It is not a residential program, so you would need to live in the greater Boston area or have a way to have housing there. But it can also be used now as a gap year option. They've kind of expanded the population that they're serving. And then there are some residential programs for college students that students can use as a gap year. I didn't mention them before because they're not gap year programs exclusively. So I'm thinking of places like Mansfield Hall, CIP, CLE, Summit Campus, places where students live in the program and typically would attend a nearby college. So for example, I have a student who's going to be living at Mansfield Hall and going to UVM, University of Vermont. Students can, you know, live at CIP in Berkeley, California, and attend UC Berkeley, for example. However, some students will use those as a gap year option too. They'll start at one of those programs before they start college. And those programs are residential, kind of wraparound, not exclusively therapeutic, but they definitely see their share of students with mental health challenges.
Wow. I've heard of some of these. I definitely came across Mansfield Hall in my search. But what I'm realizing and thinking about as we're having this conversation is just like trying to find the right university or college experience for our kids. This is also a huge whole other world to dive into and explore. Any best practices for getting started in finding and vetting a program that could be a good fit for our kids?
I think, you know, certainly working with a consultant is one option. You can start by doing a search, reaching out to other parents, you know, look at some of the programs I've mentioned. I have my own sort of list. I haven't published it or anything, but I try to be aware of pretty much all of the programs for neurodivergent students that are out there. And you can look at their websites. They often will have free information sessions, virtual session. If you can go in person and tour the program, all the better. That may or may not be practical if it's in a different part of the country. Ask them for references to talk to families who've gone through the program. Have a list of questions in advance and get multiple data points. So, of course, you want to talk to the program, but they're potentially in somewhat of a sales role. So take everything with a grain of salt and get feedback from families who've gone through the program too. But I think these programs, they really want kids who are a good fit, who are going to succeed. So they're not going to just say like, oh yeah, all kids should come and be in our program. They're going to look at you fairly carefully and try to make sure that it's a good fit. They will often give you honest feedback about why they might not be the best program. And that's sometimes true for colleges too. I just heard somebody from a college this morning say, hey, we regularly refer people to other colleges. This is from a support program in a college if we feel like we're not the best fit.
That's super helpful. And that reminder to get references and talk to other families, I think, is a good one. And that's a step that many of us, I think, don't do. It is such a helpful data point. I will say that we, for our process, if this is helpful for listeners, I kind of created a short list that was rather lengthy, but then reached out to all of those programs with very specific questions to really start to whittle it down to make sure that this was a potentially good fit, a safe environment, you know, all the things that I knew were important for a supportive environment for my child. And then I took that list to my child, and then we started going through it in more detail. So it was a multi-step process.
Yep. And don't hesitate to ask the programs for references. Say, can I speak to some families who've gone through the program? And I would hope that they would all be willing to do that. Of course, you could argue, well, they're probably handpicking families that were really happy and you're going to get a biased view, but it's still more data points. And, you know, ask those families the tough questions. And families are not getting paid to be a reference, so they're going to give you honest answers. People are used to looking up reviews online, right? Whether it's, you know, Yelp or Amazon reviews or TripAdvisor or something. And there really isn't the equivalent for this specific niche that we're talking about, but there is actually a website called Niche for colleges and so on. That's a useful resource in the college research process. But again, on social media, you can informally sort of get lots of reviews by saying, hey, who else has used this program? And what have you heard? What was your experience with this program? Now, if you get one family that was not happy, I wouldn't say, oh my gosh, I shouldn't go to this program because one family said it was terrible. I look for a pattern. I've had parents reach out to me and say, hey, you're recommending this college and we had a bad experience and I'm not going to take a college off of my list because of one parent. But then if I hear multiple parents say, actually, we agree, we also had a bad experience, I'm going to take that very seriously.
Yeah, that's great. Is there anything that we didn't touch upon that you would want parents to make sure that they knew in ending this conversation?
Well, one thing that we may have touched on very briefly, which I want to make sure we hit, is that there's also summer college readiness programs. So if you're thinking, you know, gee, a whole year before I start college and these programs, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, I don't know, it's a big commitment of time and money. Keep in mind that there are also summer college readiness programs, and many of the same institutions that do one do the other. So we mentioned SOAR. SOAR has a summer program. Mentioned Landmark. Landmark has summer programs. I mentioned Summit Campus that has a sort of year-round residential program in Worcester, Mass. Turns out they're now offering summer programs, and there are a whole bunch of other summer programs for neurodivergent students to help them become college ready. So that's a pretty good option if you're thinking, you know, well, we want a little bit, but we don't want a whole year. Or maybe you do a summer college readiness program, but your gap year is working and earning money.
So many options. Yeah, that's really cool. This has been super informative. I took a ton of notes, and listeners, there will be a pretty extensive show notes page. Could you let us know, Eric, where parents can connect with you and learn more about the services and resources you offer?
Certainly, they can go to topcollegeconsultants.com. One of the things I have there is a database of what I call neurodiversity-friendly colleges. People find that very helpful. Or they can email me at Eric, E-R-I-C, at topcollegeconsultants.com.
Excellent. Well, again, I'll have links in the show notes for those resources. And Eric, thank you so much. I will say that personally, I feel like we did a pretty good job based on this conversation. So this was very affirming for me.
I'm sure you did, Debbie.
But very informative for listeners. And this is something I've gotten a lot of questions and requests to cover this. So thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Tilt Parenting Podcast. To learn more about today's guest and the resources we talked about, check out the extensive show notes page on Tilt Parenting. There you'll find key takeaways, links to all the resources mentioned, and even a full transcript of our conversation. Just go to tiltparenting.com/podcast and select this episode. If you're looking for personal support from me and connection with the phenomenal community of parents raising neurodivergent kids, join us in the recently rebooted Differently Wired Club. The new Differently Wired Club can help you cultivate the positive shifts you're hoping for. Go to tiltparenting.com/club to learn more. The Tilt Parenting Podcast is hosted by me, Debbie Reber, author of Differently Wired and the founder of Tilt Parenting, and was edited by Andrea Curtis Amasquita. To support this show, please join my Patreon campaign where you can set up a small monthly contribution. Just go to patreon.com/tiltparenting to learn more. If you want to follow Tilt on social media, you can find us at Tilt Parenting on Instagram and Facebook. And lastly, please take a minute to leave a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps this show stay visible so others can find it more easily. And that's all for this week. Stay safe, stay well, and take good care. And for more information about any of the parenting resources Tilt offers, visit tiltparenting.com.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.